This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls. Since 2002, when we started this broad look at the world of peacemaking in our own lives and between each other, in communities and among nations, certain themes have recurred. The pursuit of love among them and dealing with fear another. In fact, both were part of the conversation in our very first show. How we deal with fear and love has also been at the heart of the stories of many others that we've told in our Peace Talks Radio series. Stories of Gandhi, King, Chavez, Mandela, the Dalai Lama, and many others. So you could probably understand why a certain event caught our attention that we wanted to share with you on today's episode. Each year for over two decades now, the people of New York Mills, Minnesota, have played host to something called the Great American Think-Off. They come up with a core philosophical question and invite essays on both sides of the topic. They wind up inviting four essay finalists to come together in Minnesota to debate the sides of the issue before an audience, who narrows the field to two in a vote, and then chooses a winner who they think made the most compelling case. In 2014, the question was, love or fear? Which motivates us more? Before we all give it a listen, as in life, I think the journey is more interesting and important than the destination. That is to say, who is declared the winner, to me, is not as important as the ideas that are brought to the table on the way to the conclusion. The audience vote on the debaters is really just a framework for the discussion. In this half-hour edition of our program, you'll hear the two finalists. Our hour-long version, available at peacetalksradio.com, includes essays and comments from all four semifinalists. From the New York Mills Cultural Center, hear now the broadcast, produced by Evan Johnson.
Welcome to the 22nd Annual Great American Think-Off.
I am nervous.
Yes, I'm nervous.
I think there's some hesitation just not knowing what to expect.
But that's not a bad thing.
Your votes will determine America's greatest thinker.
The Great American Think-Off is a philosophy contest meant for the armchair philosopher.
So it's a think-off like a bake-off almost, and it's kind of a down-home, small-town, kind of earthy notion that's not some ivory tower idea of philosophical inquiry. My name is Jamie Robertson. I've worked at the Cultural Center for 7 years now, and I'm the executive director.
I'm Alice Martin. I've been involved with the Cultural Center virtually since its beginning.
The Great American Think-Off is a philosophy contest in New York Mills, Minnesota.
In West Central Minnesota, in a town that is only 1,200 people.
New York Mills feels like kind of like the 4th of July. I'm not quite sure why that is. I'm John Forty. I'm the moderator, or perhaps the accelerator of the Great American Think-Off.
For me, one of the things it does is remembers community public discussions that small towns had for many, many decades here in Minnesota and the upper Midwest.
I think almost everybody is a philosopher in some sense, the farmer in his tractor, the fisherman in his boat, the person sitting at a desk doing accounting. Everybody has those thoughts about the big issues in life. So we're all philosophers at some level.
It's a philosophy contest for the masses. It's not designed to be a debate between professional philosophers. We try and ask questions that are relevant to people.
This year's question is love or fear, which motivates us more?
And people write essays from their experience.
The essays come from every state in the union.
And sometimes even international entries. The most we ever received was just short of 800.
The Southeast seems to produce a great many essays, but so does the Northeast. Fewer from the West Coast, it seems. And the Midwest, of course, is the basis of it all.
We have people of all ages. We've had people well into their 80s writing essays. We've had high school kids writing essays. So the age range is huge.
And when all of the essays are submitted, then the committee meets to debate which essays seem to really grapple with the question most effectively.
And four finalists are selected for an actual debate.
Welcome to the 22nd Annual Great American Think-Off, a production of the New York Mills Cultural Center. Your votes will determine America's greatest thinker. This year's question is, love or fear, which motivates us more? representing the position that love is stronger than fear, is Jennifer Nelson.
My name is Jennifer Nelson, and I am arguing for the motivational power of love. It's a question that just really resonated with me and that fit very well with my own personal experience, and that was something that made me really want to get involved. I think it's very valuable, and especially in this day and age, to have venues where we see people arguing these large issues, these complex issues that kind of underlie everyone's existence, but arguing them in such a way that's civil, and just having a forum where it shows that people can have disagreements and we can work through them and we can look at things from different sides, especially in this day and age where it's not uncommon for people to just rely on the internet and read only the news sources that already agree with them and only friend people on Facebook that already agree with them and only talk to people who have the same positions. It's always good to have public forums that bring all sides of an issue together. When I look at my essay, I think that a key part is this sentence here about, let me see here. Given my firsthand experience with this powerful force, one might expect that I would easily argue in defense of the motivation of fear. However, as the years passed and I adjusted to my new normal, I came to learn that fear is not a motivating force, though it may masquerade itself as such in the short term. In its immediate context, fear can be protective, triggering a fight-or-flight response that ensures your survival. However, once danger has passed, the fear that remains is no longer protective, let alone motivational. Rather, it becomes paralyzing and destructive. This thing that helped assure your survival, when it lingers, cuts you off from the very joys of life that you survived for. My position is really grounded in my own experience of post-trauma recovery following a severe car accident about a decade ago, and how that experience really taught me that when fear lingers in the long term, it becomes paralyzing and actually kills your motivation, and how it's only the love and support of those around you that provide you a pathway out of that fear and get you motivated to get back into life and doing the things that you once enjoyed.
Representing the position that fear is better motivated than love, Jason Steck.
Hi, I'm Jason Steck, and I'm arguing that fear motivates more than love. I'm a contrarian. I like to challenge assumptions and take the difficult position. I like topics that give a good and a bad side, a presumptively good side, and then I like to take the presumptively bad side and show that the presumptively bad side isn't as bad as people assume it is. We're supposed to like love. We're supposed to like justice. We're supposed to like honesty. We're supposed to value honesty? No, we lie all the time and we lie for good purpose. We're supposed to value love more than fear? Not really. Just because it's got a negative reputation doesn't mean it's a negative thing. And I felt that it was a provocative in that way that I enjoy as a kind of a contrarian person. I think the summary version of my argument is that we love things, but the fear of losing them is what motivates us. Fear isn't something to be feared. It's something to be embraced. Because when we identify something we fear, we've now identified what we can do to protect it, to protect what we think is threatened, or to build something that's better. And I think that leads to what the second important line, which is the concluding line, is that when evaluating which is the greater motivator, fear or love, the key word is the motivator. And so what we're looking at is what our response is. And we love things, but the motivation of fear that comes from losing it causes us to respond in a particular way that can be positive or negative. It'll be powerful either way, but we can choose what our response is.
So Jennifer has called heads, which gives her the right to decide to go first or second. Here's the coin. Mm-hmm. It's heads.
It is heads.
Okay. So you have one. Do you like to go first or second?
I will let Jason go first.
Okay, Jason, you're going to go first. Please assume the podiums. So Jason, you're going to get the first question. You have 2 minutes. Jason, how would you explain people who have a fear of love?
It's not hard. I'm one of them. One of the biggest fears that people have is to lose something that's very precious to them. And one of the things that's most precious to people is the relationships that they're in. And when you lose a relationship, when you
break up with somebody when you get divorced or when somebody dies. It's a life event of the type that makes you want to crawl in a hole and die. It has that paralyzing effect that Jennifer's talking about. But that fear also is matched by another fear. Often we have competing fears. And the paralyzing force of that fear of love is often overcome, and in my case was overcome, by another fear, the fear of being alone, the fear of never connecting to another person that way again. And that fear drives you out to overcome the other fear and causes you to re-enter the world. We recover. We get over the paralyzing effect of the fear of love that comes from a breakup in a relationship. But we're driven by the fear of the alternative to overcome that. So fear still becomes the motivator to the point that it can overcome the paralyzing effect of the other fear.
Okay, Jennifer, the first question for you. For some of us, fear is subtle and taken for granted. How do you face fear if it is not identifiable?
I think this is a really great question to go along with motivation, because it's hard to understand how would that motivate if it's something we can't recognize. And I think when people talk about fear as a motivator, a lot of the power that we've heard of, we heard Paul's story about being threatened by men with machetes. The power in that fear comes from the visibility and the urgency and the intensity of that experience. And it's a lot harder to argue that you have a motivation from it when it is constant and subtle. And I think that plays well into my argument that how could this be your greatest motivator when you struggle to even recognize it? And I think that also plays into the idea that fear, even when you believe it to be motivating, isn't sustainable as a long-term motivator, because even when it's powerful, it's that immediacy. But I've talked about how in the long term it becomes crippling. If it's can't even last when it's that powerful, how could its motivational power last when it's that subtle?
We are one quarter of the way done. The next question is for you, Jason. If fear is the greater motivator, then why does anyone serve in the military where there is always a potential of dying in a war?
There's actually been quite a few studies on this question. What makes soldiers fight? And there's a powerful argument to be made for the love side of this, is that because the findings is that what really makes soldiers fight isn't for the flag, it's not for the ideology, it's not because they support the war, certainly, because often they don't. But they fight for each other. They fight for the members of their unit. But when you really dig down and you ask, why are you fighting for the members of the unit? What are you seeking to achieve when you're fighting? When you ask soldiers this question, they provide overwhelmingly an answer that leads to fear as their recognition. What they are most afraid of is failing their comrades. They're afraid that someone will die because they didn't do their job. One of their friends will die. Their primary motivation at that moment, what drives them to go out into the battlefield, into the crossfire, to jump on the grenade, begins with love. It is the inspirational force of love. Yes, they love their comrades. But what is their immediate motivating factor is the fear that that person's going to die, the fear that they may be seen as a coward, the fear that something horrible will happen because they didn't do their job. That's why people fight in war.
Okay, Jennifer, your second question. If people are more motivated by love, then why are despots and fanatics so successful in using fear and terror to rule their empires?
I think when you talk about despots and fanatics and empires and tyrants, you need to be careful that fear isn't the only thing at play there, but power and the structures that set them up and keep power in their hands, and the structures in the governments, which are not unlike ours, in which people don't necessarily have a voice when they lack the power. So it's not only these people's fear that keeps them in place, but the power structures of their country. But it's important to recognize that some of the most noble stories we have, that we look at through history, are people that did not have the power in those situations and stood up against those tyrants and those despots anyway, regardless of that fear, because they loved something more than they feared that person. I mean, how many noble stories do we have about World War II, people who did things in direct contrast to the Nazis, to Hitler, that helped people, that hid people, that sacrificed their own lives to try to make sure that that regime that was in power didn't maintain power and continue to oppress others in their nation? And there were people that did that that weren't themselves Jewish, that wouldn't have been in danger. They had no personal gain from it, but there was a motivating force that got them to do that. And if they had only been afraid of those leaders, those stories wouldn't exist in history.
We are halfway done with our final round, and I'm going to make a couple promoting announcements that you will again be voting at the end of this round. We will have a short intermission. It'll be shorter than the previous one. Please stick around for the announcement of the winner and the award ceremony, the presentation of America's Greatest Thinker. And please join us afterwards at the Cultural Center for the reception. So, question for Jason. Why is it that the two voices in this contest say that fear is stronger are male, and the two voices championing love are female?
Yes, we noticed that fear is male and love is female in this debate, and I don't know why it worked out that way, but I can guess. Because men are socialized towards conflict. We're told in our society that the way that you achieve, the way that you build, is through competition and conflict. And so we're taught from the beginning that what is valued in being a man is to have others afraid of you. And that's what elevates all sorts of behavior, from healthy competition to the dysfunction of a bully. Women are socialized that they're supposed to be loving and nurturing and caring. And so it's not surprising that as a general tendency, the immediate reaction might be for men to prefer fear and women to prefer love. But I think in this case, it's just a coincidence, because some of the most ruthless competitors that I know and am in a relationship with are women. This one's for you.
Question for you, Jennifer. Love comes and love dies. If a fear is not somehow overcome, it lasts and lasts. Therefore, fear is stronger than love. Argue against that conclusion.
Well, I think the strength of fear, all the competitors here have acknowledged. But the question is about the motivational power of fear. And that argues that fear can last. That's precisely what I wrote about in my essay. Fear stayed. The danger was gone, but the fear was still there. And at that point, it was no longer a motivator. It was a demotivator. We've talked about fear leading to a flight or fight response. We're missing a third portion of that. It's not fight or flight. It's fight, flight, or freeze. And that is the long-term consequence of fear. Yes, it would still have power, but it becomes a power that debilitates you rather than moving you towards anything, whether it's feeling or behavior or otherwise. You aren't doing anything anymore. So when it lasts, it may still have power, but it can't be argued that that power is motivational.
Okay, it's time for our final two questions, and I'd like to remind the audience that you are voting not for the position, you are voting for the better debater. Who won this debate is who you should put on your cards when you hand them in. So our final question for Jason: does love eliminate fear?
No, I think it often causes it. And there's a funny one. I could go in a funny direction on that, but it's my last question. I'd like to go in the serious direction on that. The things that we love are the things that we are the most afraid of losing. And so the things that we take the strongest and most passionate actions to protect. For example, parents love their children more than they love their own lives. So that causes them to do all kinds of things, from good things as well as bad things, to try and protect those children. For example, they will be obsessive about getting the child in the perfect car seat, in the most, in the best car seat that they can find, and installing it absolutely correctly, and they will take all kinds of actions to just try and make sure that that child is safe from everything. And then sometimes that'll tip over into some negative actions about helicopter parents who will swoop in and confront their children's teachers for not giving their little snowflake an A. And even in college, it happened to me once. But it's because of the power of the love that they have for their children that causes them to fear even the tiniest scrape, the tiniest indignity, the tiniest bad grade from a crappy professor at Creighton University. That's what drives their behavior, the fear that is caused by their love. The love is the inspiration, but the fear is the motivation for the actions that they take to protect their children.
So, Jennifer, you were rebutting Jason's answer to the question, does love eliminate fear? Maybe you see this coming. Your final question is, does fear eliminate love?
I wouldn't say that fear eliminates love. I would say that fear hides love and makes it less visible. Because I think fear, and I think probably most of us have experienced this, fear causes you to withdraw into yourself. And love is about connections, and love is about community. And when you're in a fearful state and you're focused on self-preservation and you're withdrawing and you're pulling into a state where you feel you need to hide from whatever it is you're fearful of, you no longer are open for the connections that love will offer. That doesn't mean those connections aren't there. That doesn't mean that the people who love you aren't still around. That doesn't mean that love doesn't exist in the world. But it's awfully hard to see love when you're just withdrawing into a world of fear.
We're going to have our summation statements. 2 minutes. Jason, you go first. Is it 2 minutes? It's 1 minute. I'm sorry, it's 1 minute.
Never let a lawyer ramble on unnecessarily. There's a type of music that I don't really like much at all. Rap music, I don't care for. And there's a group that's a very loud and hard to listen to rap group called Linkin Park. But they have one song that isn't like that at all. And it starts with the stanza, I dreamed I was missing. You were so scared. But no one would listen because no one else cared. After my dreaming, I woke with this fear. What am I leaving when I'm done here? This is perhaps the most profound fear that I personally experience. It's the idea of, I'm gone someday. And is anybody going to care? And if they care, why? What do I want to be remembered for? I have a fear that I'm going to be remembered for bad things or that I won't be remembered at all. And that fear drives almost everything that goes on in my life. It drove me to overcome the experience of my childhood. It drove me to overcome unemployment and find a new job, and it drives me today. And I hope it can drive all of us to a better place.
Jennifer.
So the question before us today is which motivates us more? And we've all agreed on the power of both forces, but I still believe that fear is a force that is very powerful in the face of immediate threat, but not sustainable. Love is able to motivate us more often and in more situations. And it's a power that can remain a resource for us even when those we love aren't physically present. How many of us hang on to our memories and the knowledge? Before I got up here tonight, my phone blew up with messages from person after person telling me that they were rooting for me even though they're not here. That power is still a resource for me. Had fear been motivating me, I wouldn't be at this podium. I wouldn't be standing here, but I am. And I am largely because of that support and because of my love for the very things that this competition brings together. Writing, public speaking, sharing your story, and hearing the stories of others. I love these things. So it was a great idea for me to do this. It wasn't overcoming my fear. It was the enjoyment of those things. And I know some have talked about Maslow's hierarchy and safety. Love creates spaces of safety. When you're loved, you feel safe. You can explore. You can create. You can find things anew and make things new. So as you cast your ballot, I hope you agree with me and with the Beatles that when it comes to true motivation, all you need is love and that you aren't afraid to side with love.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jennifer Nelson and Jason Steck. And now, the winner of the 2014 Great American Think Off is Jennifer Nelson. So thank you, and we will see you at the reception.
It probably is significant that it comes out of here. Probably pretty remarkable. You know, the middle part of the country that people just fly over, and out in west central Minnesota in a town that is only 1,200 people. I think it just is evidence that there's a lot of thinking going on and a lot of discussion going on in places other than New York City and Washington, D.C., and the big cities on the West Coast, that we're thinkers, too.
I love that this event is something of a throwback. It's one where we get together and talk in real life, face-to-face, and face the community with our opinions about matters of importance in contemporary society.
The value that I see in this kind of an event is that it's just your average people talking about interesting and important subjects.
And I think the Great American Think Off is an attempt to recapture something that's in large part been lost, and that's the idea of intellectual engagement.
I think the value of a Great American Think Off is just the fact that we need more venues today where ideas are entertained from various perspectives, because we don't have as many chances for that.
Interaction with each other really builds community. People with hardened opinions reconsider them. People with opinions that they're unsure of deepen their reasoning for them.
The only rule, really, in the Great American Think Off is that everybody's opinion, everybody's argument is welcome.
I think we could all grow and come to better conclusions if we spent more time having civil conversations with those we disagree with.
Love or Fear was produced by Evan Johnson and Elida Productions. For more information on the New York Mills Cultural Center and this year's Great American Think Off, go to www.culture.com, spelled KULCHER.com.
Thanks to producer Evan Johnson and everyone at the New York Mills Cultural Center for allowing us to broadcast their Great American Think Off debate of 2014. You can link to their site from ours at peacetalksradio.com to see what they are exploring at this year's event. Also at our website, you can hear the hour-long version that includes two more semifinalists in the essay contest. Visit peacetalksradio.com for more shows from our archive and more content on all of the shows. You can order CDs from there, sign up for our podcast or a monthly newsletter, send us your feedback, and importantly, it's where you can also make a tax-deductible contribution or a vehicle donation to the nonprofit organization that produces this program, separate and apart from your public radio station. That's all at peacetalksradio.com. In addition to support from you, we also received support from the McCune Charitable Foundation of New Mexico and KUNM at the University of New Mexico. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter as well. Nola Days-Moses is our executive director, and Ali Adelman composed and performs our theme music. I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.